Are you a victim of the campus cough or other common symptoms of a cold or sore throat? The accredited University Health Center, located right across from the Stamp Union, can be of assistance. Make an online appointment at www.myuhc.umd.edu. You can receive primary care, reproductive health care, mental health care, dental health, immunization, and much more. What are you waiting for? Schedule your next appointment now.
Good evening. You're listening to WMUC Radio News' weekly roundup for April 28th, 2025. On WMUC FM, College Park, I'm Sarah Rooney.
And I'm Alex Taylor. This week, we'll go house hunting around College Park, introduce ourselves to the new face of the Student Government Association, break down some new Maryland laws, and more.
But first, a federal judge ruled last week that a second man was wrongly deported to El Salvador. One of Maryland's federal judges, Stephanie Gallagher, found that the Trump administration violated a settlement made with the man last year. The settlement allowed the man, who is now 20, to stay in the United States until his asylum case was sorted out. He was deported in March, while his case was still pending. Also last week, three children who are U.S. citizens were deported to Honduras with their mothers, whose citizenship status at this time is unclear. The American Civil Liberties Union said in a press release that the families had lived in the U.S. for many years and were deported under troubling circumstances. Donald Trump's border czar, Tom Holman, told BBC News that the mothers decided that their children should be deported with them. However, the ACLU press release said that one of the mothers was given less than 1 minute to call her spouse before the call was terminated. According to the ACLU press release, one of the children, who was deported, has cancer and was deported without medication or the ability to talk with a doctor.
In the past week, several health-related issues have come to the forefront of the Trump administration's priorities. First, U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced a ban on certain food dyes. The department will begin to work on removing 8 dyes, including Red 40, which is an ingredient in bright red foods like Fruit Loops and Gatorade. Additionally, the Trump administration answered questions asked by reporters about a proposed baby bonus, which aims to incentivize mothers to have children as birth rates fall. However, in an opinion piece for The Hill last fall, UMD sociology professor Philip Cohen said reversing birth rates will likely be difficult.
The University of Maryland Student Government Association inaugurated its new president last week. I sat down with him and have this exclusive interview.
Yeah, my name is Drew Buckmorani. I'm a junior studying dual degrees in computer science and government and politics with a concentration in international relations. And I'm currently student body president-elect until later today when I will become student body president.
That's so exciting. So let's first off talk a little bit about your background. So what roles have you previously held that set you up for being president?
So my freshman year here, I was an opinion columnist for the Diamondback, which was a great opportunity to write about things happening on campus. Around midway through my year as an opinion columnist, I wrote a column advocating for having a polling place on campus for our city elections. So I wrote that piece, and after it was published, a couple members from the College Park City Council reached out to me to discuss it, which is how I found about this role called the student liaison to the city council. So I applied for that, and I served in that capacity my sophomore year, and that's where you kind of represent UMD students in the municipal government. And then this year, I'm serving as one of the two student regents for the University System of Maryland.
Yes. So how did you and your ticket work together on your campaign and to establish your platform while you were running?
It was a very collaborative approach. I think that we wanted to make sure that anything we ran on was something that most of our exec candidates agreed on. We also wanted to make sure that we were both conscious of what the real limitations are for SGA, because there are a lot of candidates who run every year on a bunch of things that we don't really have any actual say over once you get elected.
Yeah, and so now that you're now the president-elect and you're elected Executive Vice President and VP Financial Affairs are from different tickets. How do you plan on still collaborating with them to help SGA run as effectively as possible?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm very looking forward to working with them. I think it starts by just getting to know them, honestly, on a personal basis. I want to know what they care about. I want to know what got them involved. And I think that will help us figure out what we want to work together on.
I'd like to kind of address the recent kind of bribery violation cases.
Yeah, go for it.
So how did that kind of affect your election? Kind of walk me through how your ticket responded to that and how it impacted the results coming out in kind of a delayed manner.
Yeah, for sure. So what I'll say is that under the current election rules, tickets have no say over who endorses them. So I and my ticket never solicited the endorsements from Nicholas Marks' organization, Christians United for Israel. They endorsed our ticket, and then they committed bribery, which led to the Elections Commission sanctioning 35 points on our ticket. And we disagreed with that decision because the Elections Commission, in the same finding, acknowledged that none of our candidates were directly responsible for what happened. They found that they just felt they had an obligation to give us 35 points because one of our official endorsers committed a violation. And I agree that they committed that violation. I think it was totally wrong. And if there was a way to have removed that endorsement or disavowed it, I would have done so the moment I found out about it. And I actually only found out about what they were doing the first time a reporter texted me about it. So that's how I found out about it, actually.
Interesting. Well, yeah, thank you for addressing that, because I know a lot of people have questions about that, and thank you for kind of bringing that up. So kind of to close out, what's your top priority for when you actually do take office, and what are your main goals that you want to achieve in your term as president?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I would say my top priority, because this is probably the most all-encompassing, is making sure that we're focusing on issues that students actually care about. I think a lot of times SGA can feel like an echo chamber where it's the same couple dozen people talking about the same couple of issues, and it's been like that for many years. And I really want to get us to a different approach where we're authentically engaging with students. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sarah. Governor Westmore signed over 140 new bills into law Tuesday afternoon during what was his second formal bill signing since the end of the 2025 legislative session. Let's take a look at a few of the most impactful new laws. The first bill, known as the Expungement Reform Act, makes it easier for people to have their criminal records removed after they finish their sentence and meet certain requirements. According to Fox 5 Baltimore, the bill expands upon a pardon Moore issued last June, which removed 175,000 convictions related to cannabis possession. Another bill, the Protect Our Federal Workers Act, will provide unemployment assistance and no interest on federal loans to Maryland's laid-off federal workers. Lastly, the Second Looked Act will allow certain Marylanders who have served more than 20 years in prison to petition to have their sentences appealed. More information about these new laws can be found on the Maryland General Assembly website.
Over the last decade, College Park has been on a student housing building spree. College Park was recently tied for the sixth most changed city between 2013 and 2023, according to Property Shark, who used U.S. Census data. WMUC News' Tyler Kawatran has more on what this means for the city.
Homes in College Park are getting newer, fast. In just 10 years, the median age of housing in the city dropped by nearly two decades. A surge in student housing developments has fueled this change. Today, College Park has 16 housing complexes, with more on the way. This includes 229 units set for completion in 2027 at the site of the former Campus Village Shops, and a future redevelopment of the College Park Towers, which will add 601 units across two buildings. But according to the city's 2024 Economic Development Report, demand for student housing has begun to wane. Michael Williams, the city's Economic Development Director, says he believes College Park already has an oversupply of student housing. He expects the demand for student housing to continue to drop and is unsure how issues will need to be addressed in the future. But he says that income from these complexes is meaningful, with about 35% of the city's tax revenue coming from housing developments. District 3 Councilmember Ray Ranker said that the seven largest apartment complexes in College Park bring in more tax revenue for the city than all of the residential properties combined.
It's with those funds that we're able to have some of the best trash collection and snow removal in the county. We want to keep our taxes low.
But District 4 Councilmember Jacob Hernandez has expressed concern for overdevelopment, primarily because of the lack of affordable housing and low occupancy rates.
At what point have we housed or have we priced out the people that need to live somewhere, because I know there's no way that folks are paying $18 to $2,000 a month, right? I know that there are some students that are at least commuting.
However, District 3 Councilmember John Rigg disagrees.
Arguments about overdevelopment of apartment complexes in particular, a little bit of concern trolling.
He said that adding more student housing should help lower rent prices citywide by increasing the overall housing supply. Hernandez highlighted that rent prices for student housing have remained high in the city despite the addition of recent developments.
These are private companies that want to continue to make profit, and it's fine. Like, I'm all about capitalism 100%, but like, how do you balance that out with us trying to continue to keep the world moving with students, for there to be a diverse set of students, right, who come from different income backgrounds, who have different means?
LV Collective, the company developing the site of the former Campus Village Shops, did not immediately provide a comment. For WMUC News, I'm Tyler Quatran.
Thanks, Tyler. Speaking of finding a place to call home, the Washington Commanders announced today their plans to return to the Robert F. Kennedy Memorial Stadium in Washington, D.C. The $3.7 billion plan would move the Washington football team from Northwest Stadium in Prince George's County, Maryland, back to the district after nearly three decades. The plan would also revitalize the currently defunct RFK Stadium. The stadium, one of the first in the country designed to house both football and baseball, used to be the home of the team in 1961, for almost four decades before they moved to the Northwest Stadium in 1997. In the proposed plan, the Commanders outlined that they will pay $2.7 billion for construction, while the District of Columbia will pay $500 million for construction and $181 million for parking. According to NBC News, D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser says the land has been set aside and ignored for too long. She's hopeful that this project will birth new life into the area, as well as provide new jobs, housing, and economic development. According to the mayor's office, the new stadium and mixed-use area are set to generate an estimated $4 billion in taxes annually.
NFL teams picked six different Terps in the 2025 draft over the weekend, marking the most Maryland players selected in a draft class since 1986. The Minnesota Vikings were the first team to take a Terp, selecting wide receiver Ty Felton with the final pick in the third round. After him, linebacker Ruben Hippolyte went to Chicago in round four. Defensive players Jordan Phillips and Dante Trader both went to the Dolphins in round five. And wide receiver Caden Prather and defensive lineman Tobi Akinbesote were both seventh-round picks for Buffalo and Dallas. Despite a disappointing 2024 season on the field, the draft proved NFL teams saw a lot of talent and promise from the players in College Park.
Now it's time for the Terps Sports Recap. The Terps softball team dropped three more conference games last weekend, getting swept by visiting Penn State in College Park. Yet again, UMD struggled to keep its opponents off the board. Penn State outscored the Terps 36-22 over the three games, constantly chasing Maryland pitchers early out of the matchups. The losses make Maryland 3-16 in the Big Ten, mathematically eliminating the Terps from the Big Ten tournament.
The Terps baseball team lost a crucial conference series to Nebraska, dropping 2 out of 3 at home against the Cornhuskers last weekend. The games give UMD a 6-14 record in the Big Ten, putting the Terps in second-to-last place in the conference. Now 3 games behind Northwestern for the 12th and final spot in the Big Ten tournament, the Terps will need a miracle over the final few weeks of the season to qualify for postseason baseball.
The women's lacrosse team went on a run in the Big Ten tournament, knocking out both Rutgers and Michigan before losing in the conference championship to Northwestern. Despite the loss, the Terps should still safely be in the field of 29 when the NCAA releases its bracket for the national tournament on May 4th.
As the second seed in the Big Ten tournament, the Maryland's lacrosse team had a first-round bye in the tournament. Maryland will play third-seeded Penn State in the conference semifinals on Thursday. That concludes the Terps Sports Recap. And that's it for your weekly roundup. I'm Sarah Rooney.
And I'm Alex Taylor. You're listening to WMUC 90.5, where college radio is good radio. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at WMUC Radio News and like us on Facebook. The show is directed by me and produced by Rianne Evans, our head copy editor Tori Sneed, and our executive producer Elizabeth Polo. Contributors to this week's show include Abigail Rodersheimer, Sarah Rooney, Ashna Balroop, Tyler Kowatrin, Rianne Evans, our lead sports writer Andy Parr, and me.
place in the city, a chair in the bed. I cover up all the mirrors, I can't see myself yet. I wear smoke like a wedding veil, make a meal I won't eat, step out into the street alone in a sea. It comes over me, oh, I'm missing you. Yeah, I'm missing you and all the things we used to do. MDMA in the back garden, blow our pupils up. We kissed for hours straight, well, baby, what was that? I remember saying then, this is the best cigarette of my life. Well, I want you just like that. Into your hairs, we're in a sandstorm and it knocks me out. I didn't know then that you'd never be enough. Oh, since I was 17, I gave you everything. Now we wake from a dream. Well, baby, what was that? Friends, I stare at their painted faces, they talk current affairs. You had to know this was happening, you weren't feeling my heat. When in the blue light down, baby, so bright, I face reality. I try to let whatever has to pass through me, pass through. But this is staying a while. I know it might not let me go. MDMA in the back garden, blow our pupils up. We kissed for hours straight. Well, baby, what was that? I remember saying then, this is the best cigarette of my life. Well, I want you just like that. Into your hairs, we're in a sandstorm and it knocks me out. I didn't know then that you'd never be enough. Oh, since I was 17, I gave you everything. Now we wake from a dream. Well, baby, what was that?
Hello, it's 6:33 and you're listening to WMUC FM College Park Radio. That was What Was That by Lord. I'm WMUC News Producer Katie.
And I'm WMUC Reporter Annika, and we're about to drop the latest on all things pop culture.
This week, we'll dive into JoJo Siwa's latest controversy, a concert coming to campus, and many other pieces of pop culture news.
And of course, we've got some great music in store for you. Be sure to also stick around for our pop quiz question. But first, I'm going to give the rundown on Art Attack 2025. University of Maryland Art Attack 41 will be hosted on May 2nd, 2025, with doors opening at 6:30 p.m. and the event starting at 8 p.m. The headliners for the event are Tinashe and Tizo Touchdown, with Raven Lanae opening. Tinashe is known for her viral hit song Nasty that gained much attention on TikTok in 2024, but that is not where her career started. She is a singer, songwriter, and a dancer from Pasadena, California, and stepped into the music scene in a girl group called Stunners. In 2014, she put out her breakout hit, Two On, which landed her a spot on the Billboard Hot 100. Alea Alexandra Parker, a sophomore public health major, said, quote, I'm excited to see Tinashe. I love Two On and hope she sings it. I've never been to Art Attack before, but I'm so excited to see how this one goes, unquote. Tizo Touchdown has a reputation of being hip-hop's most eccentric artist. The rapper, singer, songwriter, and producer from Beaumont, Texas, began his music career by uploading music on YouTube and producing for local rappers. After years of collaborating with other large artists, in 2023, he released his debut studio album, which Drake said was some of the best music he had ever heard. Zijon McCoy, a sophomore criminology major, said, quote, "I've never been to Art Attack before, but I might check it out this year. I wish we could have more mainstream artists like other schools, though," unquote. Raven Lynae, the opener, is known for her song Love Me Not, released in 2024, which trended on TikTok and landed the artist her first spot on the Billboard Hot 100. Only 2.5 years after her debut album, Hypnosis, was released in 2022. This album showcased her vocal versatility and songwriting abilities. Tickets are being sold for $15 for UMD Bowl and $20 for UMD Floor tickets. So, are any of y'all planning to go to Art Attack?
I am not currently planning to go to Art Attack, but I'm kind of thinking about it now. I didn't realize I knew so many Tinashe songs, so now I'm like, oh, maybe I should.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. When I was reading it, I was like, who is that? But then I researched it, and I was like, oh. I know, like, all of her music.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, no, honestly, like, I didn't know about Art Attack until, like, you just did a segment on it, but I would love to go. I love Love Me Not, and that's, like, one of my favorite songs right now, so I'd love to see that live, and I also love Tinashe, so that would be really cool. I'll totally go.
Yeah, Art Attack always gets, like, gets really cool artists. They do this every year. And I feel like it's great. I can't remember who the artist was my sophomore year, but I remember I went, and I remember it was cool. So that's not very interesting. I'm a senior, and the sophomore year one is good. Yeah. So now it's time for a music break. Here's Nasty by Tinashe.
Is somebody gonna match my freak? Is somebody gonna match my freak? Is somebody gonna match my nasty? I got stamina, they say I'm an athlete. Is somebody gonna match my freak? Need somebody with a good technique. Is somebody gonna match my nasty? Pillow talking, got my throat raspy. If you keep up with me, I'll keep on coming back. If you do it too good, I'm gonna get a dash. Does it feel just like that?
I've been a nasty girl, nasty. I've been a nasty girl, nasty.
Just like
that. I've been a nasty girl, nasty. I've been a nasty,
I
nasty,
like it,
nasty.
Just like
I've been a nasty girl, nasty. I've been a nasty girl,
just like
nasty. I've been a nasty girl, nasty. I've been a nasty, nasty, nasty.
Big time, pull up, make a scene. Party's lame, no vibe, we can leave. Shotgun, my thighs on a seat. I ain't got nothing underneath. The night.
Thanks for sticking with us. Now Casey is going to give us a rundown of JoJo Siwa being a bad girl on a reality TV show.
Performer and internet personality JoJo Siwa is in the middle of yet another messy breakup in the public eye. Siwa was cast on the recent season of Celebrity Big Brother UK, a reality TV show where contestants spend an extended period of time living in a house together, isolated from the outside world, and evict one house guest a week until a winner is crowned. Siwa and fellow cast member slash former Love Island star Chris Hughes formed a close relationship, expedited after he defended Siwa from homophobic comments from another celebrity house guest, Mickey Rourke. Rourke was eventually booted from the show after another incident, that time with Hughes. Interactions between Hughes and Siwa became increasingly physical. Face caressing, cuddling in bed together, forehead kissing, all captured by multiple surveillance cameras and microphones placed throughout the house. Many viewers perceived the pair's actions to be flirtatious, which people considered problematic because coming into the Big Brother house, Siwa was dating Australian podcaster and DJ Kath Ebbs. And to add insult to injury, Siwa said her time on the show made her realize that she no longer identifies as a lesbian, but queer. Quote, F the L, I'm going to the Q, end quote, Siwa proclaimed. Ebbs broke their silence on Saturday, announcing on Instagram that the couple had split and that Siwa had been the one to end things, at the Big Brother rap party. Ebbs said they felt betrayed and humiliated by, quote, the emotional cheating, the overcrossing of boundaries, and the questioning of our relationship on national TV, end quote. Ebbs also added that Siwa seemingly love-bombed them, even allegedly asking them to marry her before entering the Big Brother house. Siwa confirmed the breakup and its location in a Monday interview alongside Hughes with the British TV program This Morning, though she claimed it, quote, was not supposed to happen like that, end quote. Siwa and Hughes said their relationship was platonic. It's, quote, it's just a really strong bond. You can have a soulmate friendship. I think that's a thing, Hughes said. However, Siwa did also express uncertainty about the pair's future. Quote, whatever life does, life will do, end quote. So, what would be your reaction if your partner was acting like this with another person on national TV?
The videos of them together are so insane. And the fact that, like, JoJo said that she wanted to get married, like, right before this, like, that's crazy.
It just felt so, like, why do that if you're going to go in there and do that, you know?
Yeah, and also, like, on national television. It's crazy. Like, cheating everywhere. On your partner in front of everyone. And then she has to watch it. And then breaking up with your partner at like, the party?
At,
like,
the party.
That's crazy.
I would be so sick if my girlfriend went on reality, like, on a show, and was fully cheating on me in front of the world.
Yeah.
Like that. I would be a different person.
Yeah.
And do you guys have any thoughts on people who claim that JoJo was simply exploring her sexuality?
You know, I think exploring your sexuality is great and everything, but you can't do that if you're in a monogamous relationship. I don't think that's a hot take, but...
Agreed.
Yeah. Okay, it is time for a music break. Here's Break Up With Your Girlfriend by Ariana Grande.
You got me some type of way. Ain't just a feeling this way. I do not know what to say. Yeah, yeah. But I know I should think about it. So one fucking look at your face. Now I wanna know how you taste. Usually don't give it away, yeah, yeah. But you know I'm already thinking about it. Acting
cause I want juice. I am tripping if you feel like, but you without me ain't right. You could call me crazy cause I want you and I never even never met you. Say I'm tripping and it ain't right, but you without me ain't nice.
Thanks for sticking with us. Now, Kira will tell us about the life and legacy of Jiggly Caliente.
Bianca Castro Arabejo, known by their drag name Jiggly Caliente, passed away yesterday morning. Castro Arabejo was 44 years old and had previously been hospitalized due to a severe infection that caused her to lose most of her leg in surgery, according to the New York Times. In a private statement on Instagram announcing her death, Castro Arabejo's family mentioned, quote, Jiggly Caliente was celebrated for her infectious energy, fierce wit, and unwavering authenticity, end quote, as well as, quote, she will be deeply missed, always loved, and eternally remembered, end quote. Castro Arabejo was most notably known for her role on season 4 of RuPaul's Drag Race in 2012, in which she was eliminated on the 7th episode. However, her charisma, humor, and dancing skills left an impression on the drag world ever since. Drag Race, for those who haven't seen the show, which I highly recommend, is a reality competition show that follows drag performers from all over the world compete for the crown of RuPaul's Next Drag Superstar, where queens complete challenges such as acting and sewing, as well as compete in various lip-sync battles at the end of each episode. In 2016, Castro Arabejo came out as a transgender woman via Instagram on the celebration of Trans Day of Visibility, in which many applauded her for her bravery and courage. The drag star then came back to Drag Race as a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars in 2021 and later became a judge for the spin-off Drag Race show in the Philippines in 2022. Castro Arabejo also appeared on the FX TV show series Pose as Veronica Ferocity, a clothing shopkeeper in which the show followed a group of drag performers in the early 80s. Though a cause of death was not explicitly stated, fans will continue to mourn the loss of the charismatic queen for a long time. So did you guys hear about her death, and how did you hear about her death?
Yeah, I think I got a news alert about her death, but I've been seeing a lot of posts on social media honoring her work and everything. And she just seems like a great, like, charismatic person. Yeah.
Yeah, my friend and I are huge RuPaul's Drag Race fans, and my friend Dylan, he called me, like, I swear, like, 3 hours after it happened, and he was like, Kira, like, did you hear, like, Jiggly Caliente died? And I was like, oh my gosh. And, like, my friend who also likes the show, like, told me this morning, she was like, Jiggly died. And I was like, I know, like, I heard yesterday, and we had, like, a moment of silence this morning in our dorm. Mm-hmm. It was really sad. But, yeah, so do you guys watch RuPaul's Drag Race?
I feel like I like to think that I watch RuPaul's Drag Race. I see a lot of clips from it, and I like everything I see. I feel like I need to commit to being RuPaul's Drag Race fan, because, yeah, I like shows like that, so I should.
Yeah, I mean, like, I didn't get into it until really COVID, because I was the same way. Like, I would just watch clips, and then I had a lot of time, and I would watch it and then catch up, and then my friend and I would have, like, viewing parties of the seasons and stuff. And then, like, yeah, getting into college, like, I just have not had time for, like, the new seasons and stuff like that. But I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. It's absolutely phenomenal.
All right, now Katie is summoning a conclave to talk once again about the movie Conclave.
Okay, that intro is on me, you guys. Okay. Pope Francis's death has led to a boost in viewership for the Oscar-winning film Conclave, much to the chagrin of conservative members of the church. Pope Francis died last Monday at 88 years old from a stroke. The film Conclave, which is based on the process of picking a new pope, has seen a 3,200% viewership increase within the week after the pope's passing, according to MovieWeb. The film follows a fictional internal debate within high ranks of the Catholic Church following the death of a more liberal pope. Comparisons are easy to draw here between this fictional scenario and what is happening now. Francis was a liberal pope, and now more conservative cardinals are publicly advocating for the church to embrace tradition. Some conservative Catholics have urged the public not to watch the film, which ends with, 3 second spoiler alert, an intersex person becoming the next pope. Spoiler ended. However, more liberal members have embraced the difficult conversations the film has invoked about the future of the papacy. The film also focuses on the limits to change within the Catholic Church, including the role of women in leadership positions and birth control. Even the more liberal wings of the cardinals in the film are seen hushing their top picks from discussing these divisive issues, as seen today in real life. The real conclave is expected to begin on May 7th. So, have you seen the movie Conclave, and what are your thoughts?
Have I seen the movie Conclave? I love that movie. I watched it. I tried to, like, get in all the Oscar movies before the Oscars started, so I watched it, like, right before the Oscars at, like, 1 a.m. It's a masterpiece. It's so good. Ralph Fiennes, knocks it out of the park. The set, the costuming, I love everything about that movie. Please go see it. And it's so funny because, I swear a couple of days after the Pope died, I, saw something on Twitter that was, by the way, Conclave is dropping on Amazon Prime. In a few days, I was like, wow, that's crazy timing.
But yeah.
At least more access for people to see a good film.
I love Conclave. I am so obsessed with it. I saw it the week before the Oscars. I drove 45 minutes to go see it in the only movie theater that was still showing it because I wanted to see it in a movie theater. And it was so good. So good. I wasn't expecting it to be that good. I was just trying to, be ready to be pretentious during the Oscars, and I really liked it. And I'm not Catholic, I didn't grow up with any of that, but it was so interesting. I thought it was so fascinating how they talked about the internal debates about where the church is going, and I thought everyone was so good in it. Also, yeah, Ralph Fiennes, I didn't realize he's been in every movie that I like, and oh, yeah. Now I'm like,
that's
oh,
an actor.
I didn't even realize he was so the same person. I love the Grand Budapest Hotel, and he was the main guy in that.
I need to watch that.
He was also Voldemort. Yeah, yes.
Oh my
He's
God,
everywhere.
Lord, I didn't know that about
He's
him.
So cool.
That is so cool.
Yeah, and then does anyone have just general thoughts about the Pope?
I grew up Catholic. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and I think that Pope Francis was, a refreshing figure to have. He definitely, I think, helped push the needle towards a more progressive, at the end of the day, he's, the head of the Catholic Church, so it's, we got some limits on how progressive, but I think he pushed Catholicism in the right direction, and I really do think that he's a force that will be missed, and I hope that the next person that is elected to the papacy can kind of be a shining example of that.
Yeah, I didn't grow up Catholic at all or anything, but I always felt Pope Francis was a really good figure to look at. Obviously he's not exactly how I would. If I was the Pope, I wouldn't do everything exactly the same. But, I always feel for a Pope, he was doing a good job. And I feel the things he do, I feel he was just, always seemed a friendly guy who, wanted to do the best he could. Yeah. And, the images of him, in the Pope mobile, I was obsessed with him as a kid. Yeah.
When he came to D.C. in, 2014 or something, that was crazy.
Yeah. Did you see they rode his casket around Rome in the Pope Mobile for the last time?
Aww.
Yeah, on his way to his funeral. And I was yeah, the pictures from that were crazy. Yeah, I love, yeah, the Pope was very nice. Anyways.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. So now it's time for a music break. Here is Guilty as Sin by Taylor Swift.
Drowning in the blue. Life to the wolves or the ocean rocks.
Thanks for sticking with us. Now it's time for our Drop the Pop pop quiz.
Pop quiz?
Okay, so I have today's pop quiz question, and it's probably going to be really easy. But what suit color was Trump wearing at Pope Francis's funeral? Dramatic pause.
Dark blue.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I thought it was really, like, did you, that was crazy. Like, yeah. Because everyone was comparing, like, everyone being really respectful and da da da, and, like, wearing, you know, because you're at a funeral. And he was wearing, like, this, like, navy blue suit that, like, in the sun looked even brighter. So, like, yeah, I don't know. It was just like, that's wild. That's wild.
I think he also fell asleep.
Yeah, and so. He was on his phone, too.
Here, wait, guys, mm-hmm. I just want to keep talking. What is the Met Gala theme for 2025?
Oh, it's okay. I looked this up last night. It was, oh my god, it's like it has to do with like celebrating like Black fashion culture. Like, yeah, because I know that one guy is on the wait, ASAP Rocky, isn't he doing the yeah. like? Yeah. That's why I know. I don't know exactly what it's called, but yeah, and then the guy from Sing Sing is also part of the board for the Met Gala this year, and I'm super excited. Absolutely.
Yeah, the theme is super fine tailoring Black style, and it is next Monday, and we will have coverage during the Met Gala as things come in. So tune in next week. So that's all for this week. I'm Katie. Thank you so much for listening. Tune in to WMBC News every Monday at 6 p.m. and Drop the Pop at 6:30 p.m. on 90.5 FM, or visit WMUC-FM at wmuc.umd.edu. We're leaving you today with Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush. Until then, this has been
Drop the Pop.